You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 323. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the program tonight out of Philadelphia, Mr. John Gentile.
I'm here. I'm ready to vote. Big election going down in about 6 days. And
we'll get to that. Also out of the United States of America, on the other coast, Mr. Ricky Frankel in Los Angeles. Hey, Frankie.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Did I just call you Fricky?
Fricky Frankel.
Probably.
I may have. I apologize. So,
we're gonna get letters.
It's always weird to situate where these shows are in relation to what's going on in the world. We generally record on a Wednesday. We post them on a Sunday to the feed. If you are a subscriber to the feed. If you actually get this by looking at Punk News, you get it whenever the fuck I bother to post the story. But for you feed people, you're probably hearing this on Sunday. So we are like in between everything. When's your election? On Tuesday? Monday? Wednesday?
Tuesday.
Okay. So your election is on Tuesday. Fest was last weekend. So that just wrapped up. So the biggest punk news event of the year. And now we're in this weird limbo period between when you dipshits elect Donald Trump and then the world ends. So this is potentially the last Punk News Podcast before
I'm just counting the days till Toronto gets another crack smoking bear. I'm just counting. I'm biding my time.
I'm just saying, like, we can have a crack smoking mayor, but you have the potential on Tuesday, John, to quite literally cause the Norse Ragnarok to happen. Like the fucking world worm will emerge, the Valkyries will be flying, gods will be dying in the seas. It's going to be pandemonium.
Dude, how awesome is Norse mythology in that their good gods lose in the end? That's such a dark view of the universe.
I just like the fact that there was this period when people didn't have their gods as a particularly, you know, infallible being, but were rather things that could get drunk and fucked up, and
that's all Zeus does. All Zeus does is get drunk and bang human women, and then satyrs come be the baby or minotaurs. That's all Zeus does is have sex with human women.
I just like the idea that at one point there was a people where they looked and they thought, like, okay, that's the pantheon. Like, we totally acknowledge that there are higher beings than us, but you know, they all sort of live like G.G. Allen.
So true. Adam White, quick quiz. Do you know who the first monotheist, recorded monotheist, is, and the first person to describe a single deity that is infallible, perfect, and unknowable?
My brain wants me to say Zoroaster.
No, but good guess, though.
I don't know if that's true.
But you know who famously was a Zoroastrian, don't you?
Who is?
Freddie Mercury.
Oh, all right. Okay, there you go. Who was the first?
The first guy to say there's only one perfect, infallible, unknowable god was Akhenaten, the Marfan syndrome suffering Egyptian pharaoh, famously dad of what pharaoh?
Oh, Akhenaten was the dad of Tut, was he not?
Maybe dad, maybe uncle, probably pop, probably his dad.
By the way, everyone, this is the Punk News Theology Podcast. have I told you my particular weird Akhenaten story? I'm sure that I have.
I don't think so.
So, like, Adam, like
you,
many
Adam, you don't know a Dr. Redford, do you? Because he's from Toronto.
No, I don't. Oh. I don't live in Toronto, so I don't know many people that live in Toronto.
When I was in, go ahead, tell your story.
So my story is really, like most people that grew up in the 80s, there was a period of my life where I would watch In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. Did you watch In Search Of, John?
Honestly, Adam, I think it might have been a Canadian program. I don't think I've
ever seen it. No, it was not a Canadian program. It was. It may have been from the 70s, but we just saw reruns of it. But Leonard Nimoy hosted this like half-hour documentary show about like the paranormal. It was the kind of thing that like they probably ran on. It was a very like Discovery Channel type show before that station was a thing. I don't know what In Search Of was on. I will find out from actually the internet here. But anyways, so Leonard Nimoy hosted In Search Of. It ran from 1977 till 1982. So I definitely saw like reruns of it. So on one of the seasons of this show, there was, I think, I don't know what the episode was about, if it was about curses or if it was about, I'm looking it up. It was called The Mummy's Curse. It was the episode from May 14th, 1977. So it was about the curse that fell upon the people that unearthed King Tut's tomb. And there was some point in the episode where they had a bunch of people just, I'm pretty sure, dancing in a circle in white robes and just chanting Akhenaten, Akhenaten, Akhenaten. And it has stuck with me from when I saw it when I was like seven till now. Like anytime I ever hear that, all I hear is chanting in my head over and over is Akhenaten, Akhenaten. Anyways, you should go watch In Search Of. It's probably on YouTube.
I should.
Yeah, so what? This is the Punk News Podcast. We talk about stuff.
We talk about Egyptology.
Egyptology, religion, why old religion is cooler. Any mail?
Yeah, we got lots of mail. I call forth the male deities to besiege upon us interesting letters to read. And the gods have delivered three letters. This is the first letter from Nathaniel. Hi, Punk News Podcast. I cannot believe your ho-hum attitudes towards the new Jeff Rosenstock record. Granted, I'm in the late 20s demographic that you noted. The record might especially appeal to, but hot damn, I think Worry is Jeff Rosenstock's best work to date, including the bomb music industry material that I love so dearly. Musically speaking, the album is innovative and original, showing a much higher level of songwriting, arranging, and attention to detail than we usually expect of our punk artists. Jeff's band is comprised of highly skilled and energetic musicians, and they kick ass from the very first note of Worry to the very last. I was especially surprised to hear John's remarks about this record, not doing it for him, both because he likes the older Jeff Rosenstock efforts and because I usually agree with him on almost everything. Especially when
I doubt that at all.
You doubt that he agrees with me on most things?
I doubt that there's a single person that more or less lines up with your opinions.
Well, here's what he says. I especially agree with John when he's giving young Ricky the what for every once in a while. Oh, yeah. Additionally, this is Jeff's third solo full-length record you guys talked about. We cool, but none of you seem to be aware of his first solo album, I Look Like Shit. Lack of appreciation for true genius when you hear it aside, you guys are the best. Thank you for continuing excellence of the website and podcast. Nathaniel, thank you for writing in. Honestly, I only listened to the Jeff Rosenstock record three times, so I'm willing to go revisit that record, and maybe it'll be a grower for me. I didn't hate it. It just didn't snatch me up like Scrambles did, or what's the EP? Adults. I love Adults.
I'm actually a little bit more bullish on Worry than I was. I've listened to it a lot over the last week, and I really like it. So,
Adam, what am I missing, Adam? What should I focus on?
I think I said this earlier, but like I think it is really interestingly sequenced, and I still and I said that at first thinking that it got more interesting as it got wackier, but I the songs that are on the potentially more restrained first half are actually pretty, to me, they seem very, very well written from like a pop songwriting standpoint. Like, I think it's a good record. It's like, in general, by whatever measure we can go and we can say that, like, you know, if you strip off all the production delivery and everything, this is actually a pretty good song. I feel like there's a lot of pretty good songs on this.
Maybe I should buy the record and like listen to it as a record.
I think I've only listened to it once since we talked about it. I'm still not sure where I'm at with it. I'm going to be doing a lot more listening, especially since list season's somewhat near us. So I don't know. It's on my list of stuff to keep trying. But it didn't take me like We Cool did as fast, especially. So,
you know, I don't know. You know, Ricky, we talked about this briefly before, and I'm not attacking you. I could have sworn you were like the Jeff Rosenstock guy. Adam, don't you remember that? Like, I thought Ricky was the Jeff Rosenstock guy.
No. No, actually, if you remember, I actually mentioned that when we talked about We Cool last year, I was not on the bottom of the music industry train. Out of honestly, some just ignorance and not just being unaware, and then also just, you know, checking it out, not really digging it. But I really did like We Cool. Mm. I believe that was on my end of the year list last year. So.
Yeah, I mean, if we're putting this all in, like,
I guess it's like hit or miss
list perspective. Like, yeah. Worry is definitely on my list somewhere. Mm. Like, yeah,
okay.
See, for me, it might be fighting for the top. However you want to phrase it, the upper echelon or the lower echelon. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm not I wasn't disappointed with it. I just am. I'm not sure where I'm at with it yet. That's all.
This is from Neil. Last week or 2 weeks ago, someone asked me for my top five reggae picks, and my top five reggae picks for reggae newbies was Peter Tosh's Legalize It, Black Uhuru's Anthem, Yellow Man's Nobody Move, Nobody Get Hurt, Mikey Dread's World War III, and Lee Perry's Super 8, which I listened to today, and man, that is a phenomenal album. Neil from the UK, who yells at us, had a statement about that, my list. Flow, chaps. Liverpool Neil here, angry and bitter, blah, blah, blah. John, loved your reggae list idea, but I did not agree with some of the picks. But that's to be expected, I suppose. But any reggae top fives should have 2 7s clashed by culture. Probably in place of Yellow Man. But I loved your Black Uhuru pick, and I can't argue with the other picks at all. What I do strongly disagree with is your recommendation of getting remasters over the original recordings. And this doesn't apply just to reggae. Normally remastered means mastered for CD, i.e. cutting out all the highs and lows, compressing the sound, and making it as loud as possible. That's not how the artist originally recorded it, so you aren't getting the true record. Even worse still are a lot of the new vinyl pressings, and actually, this is where I totally agree with Neil with 100% on this. Even worse are where a lot of the new vinyl pressings, where all they are doing are taking the CD master and copying it onto vinyl. The only reason most of us buy vinyl is because it does sound better. But copying a CD master onto vinyl is still simply the shitty CD master. If you want an example, listen to the recent Naked Ray Gun repress of Haunted Town. They sound like total shit. I put on the original and then the repress, and the difference is astounding. So if possible, when you are buying vinyl, either buy the old original press or look for a repress that says taken from the original master tapes. And next time I want to talk about the sound difference between colored vinyl and black vinyl, as that's another interesting topic, but that's for another time. Stay free, signed, Neil.
See, I had heard that being put onto vinyl version. I've heard that being legit. I'm interested to hear what he has to say about the color vinyl versus black vinyl. I've heard differing things that, like, black vinyl sounds much better than color vinyl, and then also that there's no difference at all. So I'm curious to hear what he has to say.
I've never actually heard anything said one way or another about that. So I'm exactly. totally curious to hear.
I've heard both equally, and I think it seems like something kind of split. Of course, I like the color vinyl better just for the aesthetics.
I've heard, and I would like some sort of, I guess, a way to scientifically test this, that black vinyl does sound better. The reason being black vinyl is actually a different material than all the other colored vinyls. All the other colored vinyls are actually a different kind of material. Which kind of makes sense. Black vinyl is usually flimsier than colored vinyl, you know?
What I've also heard is that, you know, like there's some records that actually, they actually press like a on glow-in-the-dark vinyl, and I've heard that actually sounds even worse than color vinyl. Yeah, it's like the worst sound. So I don't know.
I think picture discs are the worst sound. Picture discs sound like crap.
Picture discs too, yeah, that's what I've heard also.
Anyway, this is from Portland Punks. As you guys remember, last week or 2 weeks ago, Portland Punks said they didn't like me, and so I said Portland Punks, he's not a fan of John G. Well, apparently my words have moved, Portland Punks. Here's what Portland Punks had to say. John, you're great and I love the show, but I was hungover and you interrupted Ricky like 5 goddamn times in a row. I just wanted to hear his responses without you stepping all over him. Signed, Portland Punks.
I actually heard that. I listened to the podcast like two nights ago.
And as always, you can reach us at podcast at Punk Mail. Adam, can you tell them where they can reach us at, please?
Yeah, punknews at internet.edu/.com. HTT what? What is it? Podcast to punknews.org is how you email us on the internet. If that's your thing. Which it should be, because I don't know, like, what else do you do with your time? Really, that's how you pay us. That's our payment, is mail. That's what we want. We're trying to get out of all this. And we need that payment so that we can buy records. So, this is another periodic period of us talking about shit that we've bought, which I don't know is either people's favorite or least favorite part of this show. Interestingly, before we started this show, I put down an edict that Ricky wasn't allowed to mention more than three records.
Poor shit.
And he is entirely bent out of shape about this. So we'll just have to see. So I don't know. Let's just talk about what we've been doing. I only brought this up and added it into the show just because I had one of these rare occasions where I could actually go to a record store and buy stuff. So I felt that, you know, I wanted to play. But I won't even go. John, what have you picked up lately?
Well, listen, man, I've been on a CD rampage lately. I haven't even been looking at... honestly, I was at Princeton Record Exchange this past weekend. Great record store up in Princeton, New Jersey. Kind of in the middle of nowhere, unless you consider Princeton University somewhere, which I don't. I was at Princeton Record Exchange, and man, like, their CDs are so cheap, and they get so many rare ones. I honestly did not even look at the records. There were so many record fiends looking at the records. I'm like, they can have them, baby. I want the CDs, and man, I probably got 30 to 40 CDs, but they're extremely cheap there, so that's not as much as you might think. But I'm just going to mention three really, really cool CDs that I got. I got one CD that I've been looking for ages. I got Sonreje y Comida, Adam White and Ricky Frankel. Do you know what that record is?
Nope. I don't.
That is David Lee Roth's Eat 'em and Smile album, with David Lee Roth re-singing the whole thing in Spanish.
That's
an esoteric thing that you've acquired.
I've wanted it for a long time. In the 80s, there was this marketing survey that said Spanish speakers and Spanish as a first language speakers, they're going to become a big part of the music of the North American music consumer base. So a lot of artists started recording like a single in Spanish or something. But David Lee Roth, being David Lee Roth, re-recorded his first solo album all in Spanish, and well, it's about as great as you would think it would be. I mean, his first solo album, Eat 'em and Smile, actually is the best post-classic era Van Halen record there is. In Spanish, maybe not so much, but it's just great. It's just David Lee Roth being David Lee Roth. Another thing I got was the Sweet remasters. Ricky and Adam, you guys know Sweet, the band The Sweet?
Yes, they did Fox on the Run.
Yeah, they did do Fox on the Run, yeah. Ballroom Blitz.
Yeah.
What a lot of people want is their CDs were remastered in the UK only, with a ton of interesting bonus tracks, and they sound great, but they're extremely, extremely rare CDs. Well, not extremely rare, but I would say very rare CDs. They easily go for 40 or 50 bucks on eBay sometimes. So I picked up two of them. I picked up Wink It or something like that. It's the one after Desolation Boulevard, and I got Sweet Fanny Adams and off the record actually. And if you haven't checked out Sweet, you should check out Sweet. They're a proto punk glam rock band, and they're not down and dirty like punk rock, but it's very energetic, it's very rocking. It's almost if you mixed like AC/DC with the Bay City Rollers or something.
They were super glammy. I've seen videos of them at like the Old Thistle or whatever, that 70s performance.
Old Grey Whistle Test.
That's it. They are super glammy. It's to the point where it's corny, but it's fun.
Right, but see, like, even then it was almost like they knew how corny they were,
you can tell.
But that's how awesome they were. The other thing, guys, I got a bunch of Bauhaus CDs. One of the cool things I got for $15 was the Bauhaus CD box set, which is basically the first four Bauhaus albums and the singles collection. And Adam, I don't know if you've noticed this, but they've been re-releasing like all the Ramones albums or a lot of Ramones albums in a box for like a discount rate for like $50. All the Pogues albums for like $50 for like, you know, five or six albums. Have you seen this?
I have not, no.
It's a thing they've been doing the past 3 or 4 years. They're re-releasing like classic albums at a discount rate all in one box. The weird thing is they cut out all the bonus tracks. Like, why would you do that? You know what I mean? It's like they re-released...
They gotta save on weight. All those bonus tracks are just...
Like, they re-released all the Pogues albums, the same masters as the remasters with all the bonus tracks, but they cut out the bonus tracks. Same with the Ramones albums. It's mystifying. However, I got the Bauhaus box set, which Prince Record Exchange had it marked down to a measly $15 because it comes with the CD. It's called the Singles Collection. There's lots of Bauhaus Singles Collection, but this is... There's about three Bauhaus Singles Collections. But this singles collection is unique to the Bauhaus box set and includes not every single they released, but almost every single they released in at least one version. The last track is, the, without question, the rarest officially released Bauhaus track. It is a rare cover that was released only directly to fans at a limited time. It's a rare cover of Norman Greenbaum's Spirit in the Sky. Do you guys know the song Spirit in the Sky?
I do.
Adam, what, you know that song?
Yeah.
Sure. It's Bauhaus, Bauhausing it up, man. And it is... magical. I think the reason I don't like most goth bands because I want all goth bands to sound like Bauhaus, and none of them can, and none of them do because they're not Bauhaus. Anyways, that's what I got.
Cool.
Okay. If you don't like this, the way we've changed this segment, podcast.punknews.org.
All right, here we go, Ricky. Can you constrain yourself? Here we go.
I can, it's debatable. So I kind of, a bunch of Fat Record stuff that I wanted, that I pre-ordered came in. So I got, Who Killed Mike Hunchback, the Nightbirds demo, which is actually really cool. I think it's demos of their first album, with their first guitarist named Mike Hunchback. And then, cause I'm an insane person for this band, I got Dead to Me's I Wanna Die in Los Angeles, 7-inch on gold vinyl. But I got two copies of it.
One to just eat.
Or one to play and then one to, you know, worship. And this was interesting. There's several different variants you can get of the new NoFX record. One was the normal Fat Wreck pre-order, and then there's some like an Interpunk you can get, like the pink one and the gray one. And then there was a bundle where you got a shirt. And then you got an extra 7-inch that they didn't say what it was until you got it. And then First Ditch Effort on blue with green swirl vinyl. So I got that. It was kind of an impulse buy because I was really excited about this album. And technically counts as number four. I don't know. We have the 7-inch that came with it was a yellow vinyl, but it's a single of Oxymoronic, and then the demo version of Oxymoronic on the B-side. I was hoping for other B-side songs that weren't on the original record, but I mean it's fine. That blue and green marble vinyl actually is quite nice, and I like that record. So that's it.
Cool.
Yeah,
that was very restrained.
It was restrained.
I appreciate your restraint.
Not a problem. And I'm closing the old Instagram now.
this is cool about NoFX is their CDs and their records have different versions of songs. That bonus Oxymoronic 7-inch has the CD version on the 7-inch and the demo on the flip side, and it's got the record version on the 12-inch. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I just, you know, they just weren't that specific about what that 7-inch would have, so I was just thrown off a little bit.
Do you know, what is the difference between those versions, do you know, offhand?
Yeah, according...
I haven't listened to it.
According to this, the CD version is the slow drum bridge, while the record is the fast drum bridge.
Oh, that's the kind of weird difference between something that I really like.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it? I'm becoming more and more of a fan of NoFX. They do this stuff all the time, which is really fun for collectors.
I saw them, on the 22nd, I think, in San Diego. They were so good. And they're funny, and they played a few new songs, played a lot of old classics. But, I mean, they're still kicking. They're still really good.
Yeah, it's It's sort of delightful how this like no effects just kind of keeps soldiering on, and like they haven't. I mean, I don't know why I'm even saying this, making the stereotype, because like we talk about all kinds of old quote unquote bands on here, but like they haven't gotten old in a way. Like they haven't.
No.
They haven't gotten really tired, which is nice. So I was in Toronto for some business shit a few weeks ago, and I wandered down to the relocated Rotate This. So Rotate This has been a record store in Toronto for the longest time. It used to be down on Queen West, but it moved up into the Ossington and Dundas kind of area. And it's the new store is quite cool. It was quite slick. And while I was up there, I actually also went to Grasshopper, which is frequently recommended by Damian Abraham store. Grasshopper was neat. It was one of those stores that had a lot of used stuff in it, and I wish I had more time just to sit there and bin dig. But because I was on the clock and had to get back to a train, it really felt like I was in there rushing around.
That sucks, man, doesn't it?
I know. It was definitely a store where there wasn't a whole ton of new stuff, but the old stuff was interesting, but interesting in a way that like you'd really need to be able to sit there for an hour and just like pore over things. You can't really just rifle through. So in that respect, Rotate was actually a better store for what I was looking for, just to get in and get out. So I grabbed the copy of the new Planes Mistaken for Stars record, Prey. If you do grab that in an indie store, they will have some various colored vinyl of it. I think the color of mine is technically beer. But anyways, that record's there. It's in a nice kind of like gatefold with that like matte no gloss finish on the cover. It's a nice feeling and looking record as far as cover art goes. I also grabbed a copy of Hot Snake's Suicide Invoice, which is an amazing record and has one of the best lead songs on any record ever, which is the song I Hate the Kids. So that really should be everyone's anthem in their whole life. So I'm pretty sure it's the repress of Suicide Invoice, but with Swami stuff, you never really know. I know it's the repress because if you look at the runout codes on it, but all of the Swami records are basically identical to each other. So, but that's good. I'm glad I have that because I'm going to listen to it a lot because I really love that. And then I did something I rarely do, given my limited amount that I want to spend money on things, is that I went and I discogged something the other day.
Ooh, nice.
And that is... There is, you ever heard of a band, John Gentile, called the Courtneys?
Yes, I have heard of the Courtneys. Yes, I have.
Yeah, so the Courtneys, they're a band out of Vancouver. They were more active on like 2 or 3 years ago.
That's right. Nardwar's a big fan. I almost bought their record once.
Yeah, well, you're a big fan of the Burger Records universe, so Burger puts out their stuff. And they're a band that will do... Sort of like it's like an all female three piece. They do a lot of like garage pop kind of stuff. Their whole shtick for the band is that everything is super 90s about them. Especially in terms of like lyrical references and everything like that. Like there was on the full length that they had come out, there was this big like 90210 obsession that they kept singing about. So they had a tape that they put out on Burger back in 2014 called Lost Boys, which is like a 7-minute song that is about the like 1987 movie Lost Boys.
Damn, that's cool, man. That's real cool.
But they pressed it they put it on a 7-inch for an Australian and New Zealand tour that they did in 2015. And a Canadian label called Hockey Dad Records put that out back then, so Hockey Dad has copies of that, so you can just get them on Discogs. So there's one in the mail coming here right now, and I totally love that song. It's amazing. And in my life, I would ideally have it on vinyl and not on a tape, which is not very useful to me. So I'm totally happy to have the vinyl version of that and not the Burger original. But anyways, so that's on its way here, and I'm kind of excited about it. So we're talking about record stores. We're talking about records. The list of stuff coming out on the Black Friday version of Record Store Day has been announced. You can find a link to this over at Punk News right now. So the actual Black Friday Record Store Day event is set to happen on November 25th of this year. There is a PDF that you can get that has all the list of things that are coming out. There are a few different categories of things that are coming out, and maybe I don't know the various difference between the taxonomies of stuff that they use here. So there's a bunch of stuff that are Record Store Day exclusives, of course. That makes sense. Then there's a small list of limited run and regional stuff, so I guess you can get that depending on what area you are in. But then, someone answer me this, there is something called Black Friday first releases.
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly what that means.
What is that?
What that means is you can buy it at Black Friday, but it will get a large-scale, non-rare release in about 2 or 3 months.
That's boring. Okay, so the Black Friday list is out. Who's had a chance to take a look through this? What's anyone think? Is anyone getting in line for any of this stuff?
No.
I am. I definitely am.
I'm not. John, you go ahead.
I go back and forth. Like every year I go back and forth on Record Store Day. The main point of Record Store Day to me is for them to put out cool stuff that they could not put out otherwise because the interest is too limited, but they can put out this fun stuff for Record Store Day and just to get people in the record stores. I think there's a lot of cool stuff I want to get this year. One of the main things I want to get is Alice Cooper live from the AstroTurf. That's a 7-inch record with the original Alice Cooper band getting back together in 2016 and just playing a couple of songs live in a garage. That's cool. That's fun. That'll be cool. I want to get the Ben Folds live 10-inch record. That's not going to be that great, but that'll be cool to have, you know, Ben Folds doing some live stuff because Ben Folds is really good live. What I really, really want to get is the Guar Black Friday 7-inch picture disc. And we just talked about how stupid picture discs are. Picture discs are stupid. But on one side, it's got Otis Arungis, who has now passed away, doing a cool two covers. And on the flip side, it's got the newer Guar singer, which is really Beefcake the Mighty in a new form from the 90s. Now in the form of Blothar doing two cover songs. I think they're all from the AB Club. That's going to be really, really cool. And I'm really excited. I really want that. I saw that online for $100. So obviously I didn't buy it. But that is what's annoying. It's like there's so much abuse now, I guess, in Record Store Day that people just copies have been put up on eBay for insane prices. The Napalm Death Melt Banana Split 7. It should be cool. They just did a tour together and it was really cool. The Ramones Live at the Roxy. Might get that depending on the price. Oh, I really want to get this, even though this is kind of duplicative. The Rolling Stones are putting out a 10-inch record of their song Ride 'Em All Down. Both songs on the 10-inch will most likely be on the upcoming wide release of Blue and Lonesome 12-inch, but I still want to get it. This would be a cool thing to have. Let's see. I think there's a couple other things that I wanted to get. Let me just take a quick look here. Oh, this will be cool too. Lee Scratch Perry. He's doing a recut with the U Sounds on U Sound System. The on U Sound System is a English. It's Adrian Sherwood doing basically space age far out dub and reggae. It almost doesn't even sound like dub or reggae, but it's Adrian Sherwood, famous British producer, not Jamaican, British. And it's Lee Scratch Perry doing a recut of I think it's Secret Dance Hall, which is one of his biggest songs, so that should be cool to hear. Mike Watts put out a 7-inch called the Bobby Men EP, which could be kind of cool. And those are the things that I really, really want to get the Guar thing. I really want to get the Rolling Stones one. I'd really like to get the Ben Folds thing. And and the Alice Cooper thing. I really, really want to get that too. So I'm excited. I think this is cool and fun and what Record Store Day is all about.
It's funny because Ricky, I think you and I have the same opinion on this, but yeah. You shoot yours out first here.
Okay, so for me, every year since I've been doing Record Store Day, I have had the exact, and I love Record Store Day, I had the exact opposite reaction for Black Friday Record Store Day. This to me just seems like it's just, it's you're mixing what's great about Record Store Day in April and then meshing it with what's terrible about Black Friday together. I think this is, I'm not saying that this whole list is terrible, even though there's like nothing on here I'd want. I have a few things. If I were to go out, I would maybe get, I don't know. But this overall, there's nothing really pulling me out to go in line, especially on a Friday, to do this. The two that I would want, if I were doing this, I would consider. Again, also, I think John brings up the price on this one. I think it's a good point. The Ramones Live at the Roxy. And I'm surprised, John, that you didn't see this one also. There is a South Park 7-inch coming out.
Oh, yeah. I did not see. What's on it?
It's just a Mr. Hankey's Christmas
concert. Oh, yeah, see, I mean, like that'll be funny, but I don't need a $35 record of Mr. Hankey singing stuff.
Oh, I exactly. You know? I mean, I don't know how much it's going to be. I have maybe... if there was like one time where I actually wanted something on Record Store Day, a Black Friday Record Store Day, I bought it secondhand market after a few weeks, which was fine. But yeah, this doesn't do much for me. Adam, are you in the same ballpark as me?
Yeah, I have no particular moral objection to these twice a year Record Store Day things. There's seriously nothing about this list that excites me. Like, right, if someone was to come, if someone was to walk over and like hand me some of these records, like here, have this Ramones live thing, I'd go, thank you, sir. I will have this thing. But I am probably not going to get off my duff and go actually buy it. There's nothing here that's enticing me to that degree, which is different than I think earlier in the year. There were seriously things that I wanted from the actual Record Store Day earlier this year. So, you know, that's that.
Oh my God. There's a My Little Pony release. It's called Friendship is Magic. What the hell?
That's the name of that show. Where are you? Ricky is not a brony. Okay.
No. Thank God.
I was watching that show with my daughter earlier today. So,
Adam, you know how bronies say it's actually like a good show and you should watch it? Is My Little Pony Friendship and Magic, is it a watchable show?
Yes.
It is.
I have to watch a lot of stupid shit in my life right now. And we'll pull up Netflix and there's a whole bunch of little characters that are all saying, watch me. And there's like 19 choices on the screen that are all bad. And if on the rare occasion that my daughter's like, I want to watch ponies, then that's actually pretty good for me because everything else is horrible.
There's one other thing I just wanted to point out because this has been a recurring theme recently. It's if you're actually into the Prophets of Rage, you can get the Party's Over EP also.
Man, that poor band is taking such a beating. They're taking such a beating.
You know, I wasn't the only one to give that record a terrible rating, right? I think Pitchfork gave it around the same thing.
Yeah, but they gave it to the Wrecking Boy, the guy that's like smashes stuff. But listen, I mean, it's not a great record. It's not.
So there is one thing that should be of note maybe to our listeners that is coming out this day that you on this Record Store Day that we want to give a little bit more time to here, and that is that Refused are going to be releasing a new EP on the Black Friday Record Store Day. It is called Servants of Death. It has two studio tracks that are new and four live recordings. You can actually find a video that goes with the title track, Servants of Death, over on Punk News right now. The other song on it is called Stolen Voices. It's the other new one. And then in the other, the four live songs on there is Thought is Blood, Dawkins Christ, The Shape of Funk to Come, and then Tannenhauser Derive. So those are, that's the thing that's coming out. John, did you check out this new Refused track? Where are you on the Refused spectrum anyways? Is that something that you're into?
You said Dawkins Christ, and I thought you said Dawkins Christ, like Don Dawkins. Like whoa. You know, people like love Refused. And remember when Refused got back together, like, was it 5 years ago now? People were freaking out.
No, like, it was like last year.
Now, Refused got together like 5 or 6 years ago, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. The new album came out like last year.
And people were freaking out. And I went... And I'm like, well, this is not, I mean, it's not terrible, but, and I was not that impressed with it, to tell you. I'm not a huge Refused guy. I know Adam White, I know you're a big Refused guy. But like I even have the Shape of Punk to Come. It does not blow me away. It just kind of, I don't know, like mid tempo and just not that exciting to me. And people were freaking out when I saw them. That's where I stand on Refused. What I thought was interesting about this track is, well, two things. First of all, how come no one noticed the error here on this track? I mean, Ricky or Adam, do you notice the error here on this track?
No, I mean...
What happened is the video is correct, but instead of uploading a Refused song, somebody uploaded a Lenny Kravitz song, and it's still up there. Like this is clearly, you know, it's a mid-tempo blues rock groove with some guy going, ooh, yeah, like it's a Lenny Kravitz song. I will say, and I don't mean to kick dirt and disturbs, I don't mean to kick dirt and Refused his face, but there was so much build up to their comeback record, so much build up. And then as soon as it came out, it flopped and people just did not care at all. it kind of does show how much Refused has fallen, that they're announcing two new songs here, and it didn't even really make a blip at all. Like, if they'd put this out, like, before their album, people would be freaking out. But unfortunately, I think the Refused reunion, unlike some bands, cost them a lot of goodwill, to tell you the truth. Or is the question is, people realize maybe what they thought was so great wasn't so great to begin with. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan. I thought this song was sounded like Lenny Kravitz. I thought it sounded exactly like a Lenny Kravitz song, and that's not a compliment.
I'm probably where John is on this. I mean, I was never a Refused fan even before the reunion. I wasn't all that impressed with the new album, and I won't go as brutal as calling this a Lenny Kravitz song just because, you know, I'm mean to other artists, but like, this didn't do anything for me. And I also saw a ton of enthusiasm when they got back together. I remember like a ton of people on Facebook and that I just knew personally that were super stoked that they were playing the Roxy here when they got back together, and it sold out, and then the new album comes out and it just
Yeah, that's been an interesting phenomenon, is the reaction, or the lack of, I guess, to what Refused has been doing. Now, I'm a little bit on a different side here. I really do believe that The Shape of Punk to Come is probably one of the most important punk records that came out in the whatever decade that came out in. I don't know if that was the 90s or the 2000s or the whatever, but it was...
I think it was 96, wasn't it?
Was it 90? Yeah, it was in 96. It was, I think, and remains, an incredibly important record. It is, I mean, to be honest, not one that I revisit a whole heck of a lot. If for no other reason than, you know, while I recognize that it is good, it's not really my style or the kind of speed that I listen to stuff at. But hey, I'll give it its due. And the record that came out before it, Songs to Fan the Flames of Discontent, was a solid little hardcore record. Not innovative to the same degree or anything like that, but, you know, I'll give it the respect it deserves. But, and I was actually a big fan of the International Noise Conspiracy, which was Dennis Lykson's band after Refused broke up, and to a lesser degree, The Lost Patrol, which is his kind of like garage rock band that he had after that. So, like, I'm okay with Dennis Lykson doing not hardcore things, but I listen to this, and it's like somewhere in the soft middle. It doesn't sound like what I fondly recall Refused as being, which is more abrasive and dangerous. And it's not quite over in the retro rocky kind of sound that Noise Conspiracy had. It's just like you said, it's just like a blues riff and some woes. And yeah, doesn't work for me. I think I may have listened to their new record, the new LP, once ever, and I don't remember anything from it, to tell you the truth. So I don't know. Yeah, it's odd how Refused has just not doing it for us, I guess, at this point. But, you know, I don't begrudge them, but it's... Anyways, it's coming out in Record Store Day, if that happens to be your thing. But that's that. So we're going to play a quick song and then talk about some of the other music that's shown up this week. So this is a band that I know nothing about, so I'll be super short. This is a band called Big School. They are from Welland, Ontario. So they are from like 15, 20 minutes down the road from me here. I was totally oblivious that they were even a band, but they're going to be one of the openers for the Dirty Nails annual holiday show up in Hamilton on the 27th. So this is a band called Big School from my neck of the woods. This is one of a handful of songs that they released over the summer. This one is called I Can't Get You. So it's from an EP that they put out called Summer Heat. So here you go, Big School. We'll be right back.
We're back. There's a ton of bands that I want to can say are veteran bands, not in that they are old, but in that they are known quantities that have released new music or announced new records or whatever else over the past week. So we should just touch base on each of these because I think people are going to want to know about them because these bands have a lot of fans collectively if you were to add them all up. John, I for some reason feel like you have the exact same opinion about all this stuff.
I honestly, Adam, I was going through these songs. I was like, man, I need something insightful or something to say aside from my usual script that I always spout out. I don't have a whole lot of interesting things to say about any of these songs. I mean, I can talk about them, but I do not have a whole lot of radical stances on any of this stuff.
So here's what I'm gonna do if everyone's okay with hearing me talk for a little while. I'm gonna run through these next three stories, and then we'll have a little powwow about the music that's on here. So
yeah,
I suppose the biggest of these acts would be AFI. So they have announced that they're gonna be releasing a new album. It is self-titled, which outside of the story, Adam's opinion here drives me fucking crazy. Back into the story.
And wait, what drives you crazy?
Bands releasing self-titled records late in their career.
Oh, I see. Oh, I think it's kind of cool. It's like, we're back. That's what it says to me.
Yeah, it's we're back, or I think it's a lot of the times they're trying to say that like forget everything that you've heard. This is the definitive statement of what this band is. And even if I like the record, like the Buzzcocks record, the self-titled one that released in like 2000, whatever, their big reunion one. Like, that's such a good punk rock record, but why is it self-titled? Jesus Christ. Okay.
Because they're back.
Yeah, I guess. Right. So anyways, AFI, they have a new record coming out. It's called AFI because they hate me. It's going to be out in early 2017. The full track list, there's 14 tracks on this sucker. And two singles can be found over at Punk News. You can go onto YouTube if you are not a Spotify user and you want to listen to them. We have the Spotify links up on Punk News. The singles that they have released are Snow Cats, which does not sound like The Cure's Love Cats, and White Offerings. So those are the two songs that they have up at the moment that you can go check out. Item number two, The Flatliners out of Toronto. They have signed to Dine Alone Records, at least up here in Canada. It's always a little bit unclear when a Canadian band signs to Dine Alone because sometimes they have a US deal that's involved and sometimes Dine Alone is doing it in the US as well. So I don't know if the Flatliners are still doing stuff with Fat or if they're completely doing stuff with Dine Alone at this point, but anyways. So the Flatliners, they've signed to Dine Alone, and Noisy has premiered two tracks from them. They had a two-track EP that they put out with just a limited run of 100 copies. They were like, they were putting out pictures, they were like hand stamping the covers of them, and they were distributing them at Fest this year. So the 7-inch is called Nerves. It features the songs Nerves and I'm not looking at it right now. It's like Dirt or something like that. It's not in front of me. The EP's called Nerves. Look it up. anyways, so that it's going to be it's available digitally now as well if you were not at Fest to get one of the 100 copies. But that is the first new Flatliners stuff that's come out since
probably Fangs or something.
Since really Dead Language, which is the last LP.
Yeah.
So the third, the Menzingers. John, whenever the Menzingers come up, you got to talk about whiskey and friendship and you get in trouble. But the Menzingers, they've released a new song. It's called Bad Catholics. It's from their new album, which is called After the Party, which is coming out on February 3rd on Epitaph Records, which is really now the Menzingers' sort of like longtime label, which is interesting to think about. So Bad Catholics is coming out from that record. There's a video that you can go check out that we'll play you the music. It's on Punk News as well. So these three things are all out there. They're all together. These are all bands that have had, they've had careers in that they have had a number of records that a lot of people have liked. AFI, clearly the most aged of these groups. But I think all of these bands appeal, all these bands have the chance to sort of appeal to people that are in the same the same sort of demographic, which we all roughly fall into. And these are all bands that at one point or another, punk news has either loved or hated, depending on which way the wind is blowing. So, John, I guess we'll start with you here, because I listened to these things and I was having a hard time listening to them without hearing your voice in my head.
I'm like Adam White's conscience. He's like, Adam, you know this isn't punk. Look deep within yourself. You know this is a fraud. Listen, this is not my bag, and I don't think any of this is terrible. But someone referred to the Flatliners as dad rock, and it very much does sound to me like 90s radio rock music, and the Menzingers too. AFI kind of sounds like 80s rock music, like the. It almost sounds like not even like The Cure, but like 80s like pop music, almost like George Michael's, like overwrought, like Michael Bolton almost. All three of these bands gotta have like a Michael Bolton vibe going. They're like, you know, if I would do anything for you, like I'm just not into it, man. And that's not to say it's bad. There's certainly a lot of worse music out there. It's not made for me, but it does make me wonder, like, does my punk even exist anymore? Now, in Philadelphia, there's a lot of crusty shows, but they're very crusty and they're very deep-y, and that's kind of the limited range of punk that they live in. Is the kind of punk that I like, you know, kind of the wild, crazy, anything goes, Danger House, maybe you have a statement to say, maybe you don't have a statement, maybe your statement is just nihilism, maybe your statement is just chaos, maybe your statement is just funniness, like just the pure unexpected joy and edge of crazy punk rock. Does that even exist anymore for me? Is my punk rock gone? And that's why I have such a conflict with so many of the commenters. I mean, this is why I do have a conflict with the commenters, is because I bash on a lot of bands that they love, and that's why they hate me. Which, listen, I'm not going to change my position. Punk rock is not about conformity. So is my, and these bands are all three that are very popular, even at Punk News. So is my punk rock, does it no longer exist for me? Am I a dinosaur? Or am I from the future?
I don't know about that, but I think you're too worried. There's really just sort of an economic argument here. The kind of punk rock that you like absolutely exists, because I feel like I see it all the time, but it's that it's so sort of on purpose, both esoteric, difficult sometimes to listen to, and difficult for those bands to maintain themselves, like to stay together, that it's not going to be able to, I want to say, like, compete for airtime with, say, these three pairs of bands, or three pairs, I'm just making sense, these three bands that all are, by the virtue of their radio friendliness, which isn't really the right term, but by the virtue of their sort of like general middle of the road listenability, can sell a lot of records and therefore can get a lot of press that can, you know, be promoted and get in people's faces and do giant tours, you know, and even a band that does say do something sort of like weird and whimsical that I feel that you'd like. So like, let's, you know, I'll use like Crazy in the Brains as an example, or even Bad Canoes, right? Those bands have a financially much harder go than if you're, you know, the Menzingers signed to Fat. And so it's harder to, I guess, maintain that as a longstanding artistic vehicle when you got to, you know, work in a pizza joint for the rest of your time.
And that's why I don't, like, I sort of understand Bad Canoes, because Bad Canoes is a very weird band. That's why I love them. Crazy in the Brains is weird too, but they rock and they swing and they're funny. Like, I don't understand why Crazy in the Brains isn't like the biggest band in the world. I honestly don't. Yeah, I really don't. Like, I don't understand why Crazy in the Brains isn't way bigger than AFI or Menzingers. And I'm not dissing those bands. I realize those bands do their thing. But why isn't Crazy in the Brains huge? Like, what's threatening about
they're
Crazy?
Too happy.
Is that what it is? People don't like happy music?
I think, kind of going generally, I don't know. I think you kind of notice this like trend of like kind of like gloomy indie kind of sneaking into all sorts of genres. I wonder if that's maybe has something to do with it. I don't know. But I mean, there's a xylophone or a glockenspiel in Crazy in the Brains.
I think it's a xylophone, honestly.
It's bound to be happy. How can you be depressing and have a glockenspiel in your music?
This is like a it's physically impossible at that point.
When has a goth band had a glockenspiel?
Okay, but so if we circle back from John's fatalism here and actually talk about these records, I feel that like of these, I'm unsure of where. I'm unsure of who AFI's audience is anymore, because when back in the Nitro Records era, when they had, you know, Black Sails and The Art of Drowning came out, when they were touring with Rancid and the Distillers, and like during that era, I completely get who AFI was singing to, because they were singing to me. Like that was they lined up perfectly with the kind of bands that I was listening to as like a 17, 18 year old listening to all that stuff. So I get that. And then they signed to the major, they cleaned themselves up, they stopped being as cartoony and misfitsy, and they went down this, I mean, John kind of touched on it when he talked about like the 80s vibe, but they went down this more synthy, bigger production road. And I mean, it could be that that's just where they ended up from a, you know, from the wandering attention span of an artist standpoint. But it definitely looked like that they did that because it would help them get onto radio and help them, you know, become a bigger band. It seemed calculated, but they still sound like that. And that's what this record doesn't sound. The songs from that I've heard do not seem all that different than the kind of stuff that was on. Oh God, what were those records called? Crash Love or December Underground or any of those other things. So are they still trying to appeal to this conceptual, you know, 16-year-old girl that I assumed was the audience of that other stuff? Because I, you know, she's older now. I don't know if she's into that. And so I don't know. I have a hard time with it. I still kind of want to hear this AFI record, if for nothing else than nostalgic purposes. But I'm totally unsure of what their even who their audience is at this point. It's funny that the one thing we don't actually know about, and this is the thing that probably would appeal to John, is that Davey Havoc, the lead singer of AFI, did go and record a record apparently with everybody who isn't Gwen in No Doubt. So, coming back to recent Funkies podcast themes, yeah, your buddy Gabe might be on that one.
he might be. I would say, great, they took my favorite thing of No Doubt and took it out and replaced it with something I don't like at all, you know. But listen, if Gabe's going to be on there, then I got to get it.
So yeah, that's what I figured. The Flatliners thing, these two songs were fine by my standard, but they weren't, I don't remember either of them sitting here talking about it. And that's a little concerning, if for no other reason than I really liked Dead Language. It was my number one record of the year it came out, and I really liked Cavalcade, which was, if not my number one record of the year, that came out, like, among it. Like, I really liked those two last records that this band put out. So, I don't know. We'll have to see what's going on there. Menzingers, I feel like I've ignored them over the past couple years, and this may be because when I close my eyes, all I can hear is John Gentile talking to me.
Adam, you know this isn't punk.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
this isn't
right.
What you want to do.
It's so that's all I can hear when I close my eyes is John nagging me. And I get that this song is meant to hit all of those, like, you know, aging, you know, old punks nostalgia points that this band is really good at hitting. But like, man, I was a bad Catholic. Like, I was. What's my upbringing? I'm listening to this song and I'm like, oh, these lyrics are actually speaking to me. So, I'm going to give this one a go. I'm on board for the Menzingers thing. I think, you know, that they went and they wrote something that directly speaks to what I feel is my life experience. So I got to give them that.
Okay. I'll be quick on the AFI thing. I mean, am I Am I missing something here, or was this moving into Fallout Boy territory?
There's a thin line between,
right?
Between like AFI getting all synthy and doing studio shit, and, you know, one of these super pop pop punk bands.
Yeah. So I'm gonna leave. I'll leave that there. God, you know, the Flatliner stuff. Well, first of all, is Dying Alone Records, are they like a big label, like comparable to Fat and Epitaph?
As far as in Canada goes, Dying Alone has become a massive label.
Okay.
And okay, they're like to the point where like they will go and they will put out, like, they've only been around for 10 years or so, but they'll put out the records from bands that have big careers otherwise. Like for example, like they put out the record from like the Lumineers. That was really huge. Yeah.
Okay, so because, you know, it's kind of hard to gauge. They're fairly new to me, at least. First of all, I think the Flatliners, if they were just to leave Fat completely just to go to Dying Alone, I think that would be big news. The Flatliners have done a lot with Fat. I was looking at, before we were we started, I was looking at their discography on the Fat Records website. They've done quite a lot with them, including 7 inches, all those like four like LPs or something like that now. When it comes to these songs, I was rooting for them here. I really do like this band, but these just did nothing for me like Dead Language did. I skipped Dead Language when I heard it. In terms of buying it, it just seemed too, all of it just seemed homogenized into one sort of one, like one overall sound. I just found generic. And then so I skipped Division of Spoils, that B-side thing. I loved that Resuscitation of the Year 7-inch with Fangs on the back, on the B-side. Loved that. And I loved their first three albums. I thought Cavalcade is fantastic. I love their ska stuff. But I don't know this. This stuff seems too generic, and I don't want that to happen to us because I really love them. Like, they are great. But yeah, so these two songs just weren't doing it for me. Now, when it comes to the Menzinger song, I like Lookers, that first single they released. I love Bad Catholics. This is the Menzingers that I really, really love, and I don't think we got enough of from Rented World. I love those three records, their first three records also, and the, you know, Hold On Dodge 7-inch, I Was Born EP were all great, and so I'm happy. I honestly jumped on this pre-order like crazy from Epitaph because this sounds really good. So I'm not kidding, I've had this song on repeat all since it came out, and I want to get that. They also released a 7-inch for Fest that I also want to see if I can get my hands on at some point.
You see, I'm shocked how I can disagree with you and agree with you mm-hmm. in the same line to such a degree. So like, yeah, like Lookers, Lookers didn't really do too much for me, but I like this so much better than Lookers that I'm suddenly really interested in this record. To rewind a little bit, I have a framed poster for Dead Language literally 3 feet from me.
So then tell me, like, what was going on? Because, you know, I saw like everyone was, I didn't think it got the same, it didn't seem like it got the same praise as like Cavalcade.
Well, because I think Cavalcade was sort of out of the blue. They were a fun little ska punk band maybe before that, but like Cavalcade was such like a big fucking punk rock record that had just huge hooks all over the place that it just sort of blew everyone away by how different it was. To me, Dead Language is not that different from that. It was just sort of a continuation of it. Like, I think I prefer Cavalcade to Dead Language, but I certainly, you know, I hold them both in a similar esteem. So I think it's really just more comes down to the fact that you're a bad person.
That's probably it. But there was one other thing, with Cavalcade, they broke it up, you know, into those, you know, they had like those, you know, like kind of just melodic punk songs in Cavalcade, but they broke it up with Shithawks and He Was a Jazz Man. And those are my two favorite songs of that record. And I did not get the same thing from, they didn't change it up like they did on Cavalcade with Dead Language, I thought.
Germs. Black Lady, the Metro Squad, Avengers, Crime, Rhino 49.
All right, so John is going to have
overloaded with dad rock.
So, so anyways, Ricky, yeah. Play us a song so that John can recover.
Oh, did you want? I was hoping you would actually respond.
Oh, me?
What I said? No, Adam.
What, me? Oh, what? Respond to what? You're. Oh, well, I was going to say, go listen to Birds of England on repeat. Kennedy, I think that is such a good song, and to me, completely makes Dead Language work.
Okay. I'm willing to give it a chance. I'm willing to give it a chance again. I also need to. I've also decided to give Rented World by the Menzingers a re-listen also, because that's the one that I was having the most trouble with. Okay, so Frank song.
Christ. Plastic surgery.
John. We are going to talk about the dwarves in like 2 minutes. Yeah.
Okay, so every year I die little inside when I don't get to go to Fest because I'm out here on the West Coast. So I make it my mission to go to some awesome show that's happening around Halloween weekend around Fest. So this year, last year I went to Jello Biafra on the Guantanamo School of Medicine, which rocked. This year, I managed to see Left Alone open for the Suicide Machines, which was fucking awesome. And I reviewed the show, which you can read on Punk News. I don't know if it'll still be on the site by Monday, but it's out there. It was a great show. Left Alone were great. Suicide Machines, I couldn't have asked for anything better. It was amazing. But what they did have, the very first band was a local band called Noise Complaint. And they were cool. So I think they've been a band for like 5 or 6 years now. They're in the SoCal ska punk scene. So they had some good stuff that they played. I'm gonna play a song called Faceless off their 2015 release called it was self-titled. So yeah, here is Faceless by Noise Complaint.
John, we're back. We got two stories here coming up that I think you really are really your bands and things that you like, and we've just beaten you with all this old man dad rock stuff. So talk to the people.
You know, Adam White, speaking of dad rock, if there's anything, I definitely represent the voice of the youth generation, let me tell you. Listen, Personal on the Pizzas, maybe not a whole lot of people know about this band. Adam, Rick, you guys know Personal on the Pizzas?
I don't.
A Bay Area band, not that big outside of the Bay Area. I think they're awesome. I actually briefly spoke to Personal himself. I said, man, I love your band. You guys were great. And he basically was discussing with me that I thought his band was good. And he was like, we're basically just a Ramones and Stooges cover band. I'm like, oh.
You know, honestly, this is the only thing I have to say about this, because I listened to a few songs. They seemed like a more hardcore-ish version of Mean Jeans.
I mean, they're all from like the same. Mean Jeans are from Portland, but it's all kind of the Burger Records crew. And there was a label from before Burger Records that a lot of these kind of guys would hang around on. They're slovenly. Actually, Mean Jeans and Personal Pieces, I think it's like Time Out of Mind Records or something. They're all in the kind of same Ramones core garage rock scene. Like, they all kind of hang around each other. Everyone thought the Personal Pieces had broken up, but apparently they're not. They're back with a new album. It's about half previously released rare singles and half new songs. Not a whole lot to say about this. You should check out this band. Personal and the Pizzas is a cool band. Some of their songs are literally Ramones songs with new lyrics on top, or Stooges songs with new lyrics on top. And they're just awesome. They're fun. They're not too serious. I did find it interesting that they only made 100 records of their new album. They can only sell 100 records and it's sold out, but that's cool, man. Personal and the Pizzas are a cool band. They rock, they're crazy, they're wild. Maybe I'll play them tonight, we'll see. Another thing that's coming out, The Dwarves. Black Dye is re-releasing a whole lot of his side projects. A lot of people don't know that Black Dye has got a lot of different side projects. The ones that he's re-releasing is a Penetration Moon, which was a Dwarf spin-off band from about 1991. They called themselves a glam rock band, but they're not glam rock. If anything, they're kind of like gutter punk. They covered Gigi Allen, they covered Johnny Thunders, they covered the Dead Boys. Interesting, not their best work, but interesting. What is more interesting, though, is Blag's also re-releasing his Earl Lee Grace record and also his Candy Now record. Earl Lee Grace is... What's the cliche now with punk rock guys when they get old? What do they do?
Oh, like banjo and beard and flannel shirt.
Right. Well, Blag was doing the hillbilly thing back in 1996, long before any of these guys had done this. I'm serious. In 1996, he released an album under the pseudonym Earl Lee Grace. Everyone knew it was him, but he wouldn't admit that it was him. And it's actually it's a little bit more hillbilly and more up-tempo than, like, you know, a Veil or that kind of stuff. But it's Black Dahlia doing country folk music. Some of the songs are funny, some are not. It's actually a really good, really interesting record, and it's cool. The other record is a more harder to describe album. It's Candy Now, which is Black Dahlia and Angelina Moisov of Persephone's Bees, and they do what they call Europop. I don't exactly know what Europop is, but it's the kind of music you would imagine that Austin Powers listens to, if that makes any sense. You know, it's kind of like groovy, kind of like Tom Jones lounge music, but not as cheesy as Tom Jones. It's very melodic, very interesting, and they're all worth checking out. And they're being released. A lot of them were hard to find for a while, so this just goes to show, you know, people often say the Dwarves are a hardcore band or the Dwarves are a pop-punk band. They're not, but this even more so shows the sheer span of what the members in these bands are capable of and the interesting things that they've done.
The Personal the Pizzas, that to me is an interesting thing to listen to, because I find I have to keep putting aside the fact that they're obviously just rewriting Ramon songs, something directly, right? Like, was this the one song here? It's called like Josie, I think. Joni is like, I want to be your boyfriend.
Yeah.
Right, which just with different lyrics on it. And on the one hand, It's sort of pleasant, because for as much as we talk about Ramones core bands sometimes, there's, you know, you be in a fast pop punk band like the Ramones, and then there's you doing Ramones songs, right? Like, this is not on the inspired by the Ramones realm. This is the, we are doing Ramones songs, more or less, note for note. And it's fun and cool from that standpoint, but I have to keep checking this part of my brain at the door that is wanting to be like, this is way too familiar when I'm in the middle of one of them.
The one time I said to him, oh man, I think you guys are great. And he's like mad at me. He's like, we're just ripping off the room. So I was like, all right.
This is, I think, one of the first times we've ever mentioned Slovenly Records on this podcast, but Slovenly had some cool shit that they put out. I assume they're still around, actually. We don't talk about them much at all, but there's some neat stuff that's on Slovenly. They had I feel like there was a Spitz record that they put out at some point. One of the first or second Spitz records. They definitely had, there was a garage rock band that was on there that I really liked called,
Oblivions? Was it Oblivions?
No, the Oblivions might have been on there, but there was a band called the Losing Streaks that were on there?
There's the Cheeps, the Rippers.
Let's see, was it the Losing Streaks? The Losing Streaks had a record called Sounds of Violence. Yeah, okay. Oh. The Losing Streaks had a record called Sounds of Violence that was out in 2004 on Slovenly that I was quite fond of back in the day. They may have put out something by The Hunches as well. Anyways, Slovenly has cool stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to chime in on that. I have nothing particular to say about any of the Blag stuff outside of the fact that I should probably check some of it out.
Yeah, me too.
Because, Blag is...
Blag is a man of many talents.
Friend of the podcast, friend of the world, so...
Blag is a man of many talents. Blag really is one of the most underappreciated punk rockers there is. He really is.
So John, we can do this next story. We're like an hour and a half into this sucker.
Let's do it, man. Let's do it and let's wrap it up, baby. All right.
So this last story here. Why don't you read us in here?
Okay. This was confusing to a lot of the punk news readers. They're like, why are you talking about this rapper? So anyway, I guess he calls himself a rapper. I would say an MC, but this rapper Kevin Gates. Last year, he did a show at a club in Florida, and while he was doing his show, a young lady kept grabbing his feet. So he tried to shoo her away. She grabbed his feet again. He went to another part of the stage, and it's not clear if she followed him to the other part of the stage or he came back and forgot or whatever. So she grabbed his feet again. So he kicked her in the face, and quite interestingly, probably, I don't think it's probably the first time ever, but this is very rare. He was charged with criminal battery for kicking this woman in the face. And she didn't even really have an excuse as to why she was doing what she was doing. Her excuse in court was she wanted to get his attention to look at her friend. So that's why she kept grabbing his face. And I think it's clear from the record she was doing it just to annoy him or be annoying. And so he kicked her in the face and he got charged with battery. And he was found guilty of battery and sentenced to 6 months in jail. The security guards were the most damning witnesses against him because they said he could have backed up instead of kicking her in the face and he probably wasn't in any real threat. Quite simply is, you're allowed to use physical force to defend yourself in a battery scenario, but you're only allowed to use reasonable force. So if someone is trying to punch you, you can punch him back. If someone's trying to stab you, you can stab him back. But if someone is like tapping you on the back, you can't stab somebody. That's not reasonable force. So the court found that this woman grabbing his feet, him kicking her in the face, wasn't a form of self-defense. It was battery. So people are like, why are you talking about Kevin Gates? What do we care about this guy? This is important because, as we all know, a lot of punk bands have faced extremely similar issues with NOFX. That guy jumped up on stage and touched Mike's shoulders and Mike kicked him in the face. And as I think Mike should have. Screeching Weasel, what's his name? Ben Weasel got spit at with an ice cube, so he jumped into the audience and punched a woman in the face and was dragged up on stage and then punched another woman twice more. The Off With Their Heads guy, a girl like, threw a bottle at him, so it's unclear if he booted her or if he pushed her with his foot. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anyone push someone with their foot, but it's possible. The story so far, a girl was taking a selfie on stage, and the story so far, D-Bag did a flying jump kick and knocked her off the stage. That was certainly excessive. So the question is, Florida is famously reactionary when it comes to obscenity, when it comes to this kind of thing. The question is, do punk rockers need to be more careful now? Can punk rockers, it's one thing to get sued civilly, but it's a whole nother thing to go to jail when you boot somebody on stage. And also, are we creating a precedent that you can harass people on stage as much as you want without fear of retribution? It's a hard line to draw. I will contradict myself a little bit here. I don't think you should have kicked his girl. I don't think a girl grabbing your feet means you should kick her in the face.
Yeah.
Now, of course, when you're up there and on stage, you're not thinking straight. You're thinking about the show. Adrenaline's going through you. And she was clearly trying to annoy him. Nevertheless, he shouldn't have kicked her. It was wrong. But if it was a guy, I would have said, yeah, you should have kicked him in the face. That's great. So I don't know if that's hypocritical or not. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. Whether if it was a guy or a girl, I think one of the small details that you mentioned was what was probably the best recourse. Being grabbed at, that's going to happen on stage. You're going to have, drunk or just asshole fans, and it sounds like either one of those. To kick someone, it sounds bad. I was wondering if there's video of this, but I didn't look. If there's security guard witnesses, why didn't he, if he was that pissed off at this girl to kick her, why didn't he just get security to throw them out?
Well, honestly, like
he just could have waved to them and said, "Hey, over there, out," and just just pointed to them pointed security, flagged them down, pointed to her, and got them out. That was it. This could have all been avoided.
But, I mean, honestly, don't you think it's a little bit hindsight is 20/20? Like,
because you're saying that because you said that there are security guards that are witnesses. Use the security.
Yeah, but I mean, when you're up there, though, I'm not saying he was right for him to kick her in the face. He should not have kicked her in the face.
Right.
But I'm saying, to a degree, I can understand how that would happen because you're up there, adrenaline's going through you. Thousands of people are yelling, not at you, but with you or whatever. And so you're not thinking, it's not like he's standing there thinking, this woman is bothering me. What can I do? It was probably just like an instant, like, get off me, snap, just like Fat Mike when that guy jumped up on Fat Mike's back.
That's possible, but then, just because it's a snap decision doesn't mean that there aren't going to be consequences, regardless if they seem hypocritical or not.
Well, I agree with you.
I think that, honestly, in this case, because we've had different scenarios of this, where, security just wasn't there. We've seen video that it just wasn't a good idea, for both cases where we thought the person was right or wrong. Honestly, he could have... If security were close enough to see what was happening to be the witnesses, I mean, just get them. I just have a little bit more restraint and just get her out, and just kick her out. Then you get this whole thing. Then you're not going to spend 6 months in jail. It'll probably be three. In reality,
what I wonder really is less about the situation because I haven't actually seen anything about this from a video standpoint or anything, so who knows, but John, from like a legal standpoint, does this kind of thing like set precedents at all? Like, does it make it potentially worse for just some band that is in this kind of
from a legal case law? I don't see much precedence being set here. It's someone was attacked or bothered. Did they use reasonable force to stop that unwanted contact? The answer is no. He used unreasonable force, So, I mean, that's as common law as it can get. However, does this now mean the DA's office will
not... Oh! Sorry, I found the video.
How bad did he kick her?
It's not... No way. This was not called for. It was a hard kick. I'll put it on the thing, but if you guys want to just take a look, you can. It starts in like the first 5 seconds. If there, it's on the Google Doc. Oh man, it's hard. Like, and the way she was grabbing wasn't. Yeah, this was not necessary.
But however, what this kind of decision will mean is it'll encourage the DA's office to prosecute these kinds of things. And I think in general, these things are better handled in civil court. I mean, I don't necessarily like, I mean, when that guy jumped on Fat Mike's back and Mike kicked him, I think Mike was in his right to kick him. But I mean, like, let's say Mike was in the wrong to kick him. Is Mike a dangerous guy that's going around and start kicking people while he's performing? No. So it's better off in the civil courts as a tort between two people. It's not a threat to society. And so I think this will make DAs more hungrier to, you know, get a notch on their belt with these bigger name artists.
Well, the one thing about the Fat Mike case, I think, is that there's a big difference there, is that he kind of said to the crowd, like, my back is killing me. Like, he actually warned everyone, like, don't touch me.
Well, Mike was also more reasonable in that someone jumped up on him and he kicked that person off him, you know? Well,
and the person that he kicked actually was fairly reasonable, too. If we remember, he admitted he was blacked out drunk. And it just wasn't paying, and just was completely careless,
But I'm just saying, though, you know, in punk, you know, people jump up on the stage all the time, sometimes when they shouldn't. Is the DA going to start saying, ooh, I got a case now because, you know, I blagged out and punched this guy when he jumped up on stage. You know, well, that's kind of dangerous. You know, in a punk show, that's kind of the risk, jumping up on stage. You might get whapped, you know, but that's not how the DA's office is going to see it, especially now. Now, do I think there's going to be sweeping crusades against bands, punching people on stage? No, but, you know, this is a step in a potentially more restrained direction.
You guys should really watch it. It's in the first, like, 5 seconds. This might change everyone's mind. I mean, she seems okay, but it's a big kick.
All right, I'm looking at it right now. Shocking moment. Kevin Gates kicks fan for touching his leg.
This is ABC News, by the way.
Well, I'm going off the Daily Mail of the UK, Ricky. All right, I'm watching it right now. You guys can all listen live while I watch Kevin Gates kick this unfortunate young lady in the face. And here we go. It's starting. Here comes the windup. Oh, wait, it's an advertisement.
What's the advertisement for? This is what I would.
The advertisement is for Katie McGinty, who's running for state position or federal position. Maybe federal position. Federal. Here we go. All right, here comes the windup. All right, he's standing there. Ooh!
Right?
Ooh! I'll describe it to you. What happens is, like, he can see the girls trying to grab him, and he's just standing. This is why they found him. He's standing there, right? And he sees the girl is trying to grab him, but he's like mad at her, so he's like staring at her. So to agitate him, she reaches out and grabs his pants. So he does kind of a soccer style kick right to her face. Ooh! So he really whomped her. Was that right for him to do? No. I don't know if he should get criminal charges, probably civil charges. But, I mean, she was trying to agitate him. So I don't know.
She was clearly being provocative and annoying. But, like, that was a bit of an overreaction on his part.
Yeah, it was an overreaction. But in the moment, it's tough to say, you know. But, I mean, he definitely shouldn't have kicked her. He really did whomp her when... He could have just gotten the security to say throw her out, you know. But
I'm not going to bother watching this because no one wants to wait and listen to that right now. But you figure if you are on stage, you are a little bit more in the position of power here. You have lots of options other than kicking a person.
But security.
That's all hindsight. You know what I mean? Like he shouldn't have kicked this girl. I mean,
he wasn't backed into a corner. He could have just like backed up, couldn't he?
But the adrenaline's not flowing through. You're not doing your thing, you know. But I don't know.
Don't kick people in the face. That's what I'm saying.
I think it's hard to kick dudes in the face if they're trying to annoy you, not girls.
All right. Please write us, podcast@punknews.org. Let us know who John can kick in the face or not. All right, John, are you playing a song? Or are we getting out of here? What's going on?
I'm
going
to play a song. Let's play Black Dahlia. Let's play him. You guys want Black Dahlia Goes Country or Black Dahlia Goes Europop? What do you guys want?
I'm kind of curious about the country.
All right, let's do Black Dahlia Goes Country. This is off the early Grace record, just reissued out on Burger Records. And of course, much like stocks and bonds, I was holding on to my very rare early Grace CD, which was worth $80 or $90. But now that it's been reissued, it's back down to $10. I should have sold when the market was high. Anyway, this is Black Dahlia doing early Grace.
Life must still go on, but I don't know just-
All right, that was Black Dahlia from the Dwarves. This is it for the Punk News Podcast this week. If the world ends on Tuesday, possibly this is it for the Punk News Podcast ever. So,
well, Adam, you'll still be around. You'll be able to do it, you know, by yourself in like a basement or something.
But like you think America is just going to like sink into the sea with like a clean cut line at the border?
Yeah, perhaps. And then it'll be all barren land for the Canadians to invade like they've been wanting to do for decades now.
I know. We need somewhere to put all of our stuff. So anyways, podcast@punknews.org if you want to email us. That's it. We're out. Bye.